Welcome to the OA Virtual Kitchen Sink Meeting Podcast. Visit the Los Angeles Intergroup at oalaig.org for information on how to join our meeting live and how to donate to support this meeting and our podcasts. The opinions expressed on the Kitchen Sink Podcast are those of the individual speakers and do not represent OA as a whole. And now, our speaker.
My name is Rika, as you know, and I'm a compulsive overeater, bulimic. I want to say thank you, Bob, for asking me to speak. It's so nice to see some of the faces, even if it's just your picture, who I haven't seen in live and in person in a while. I've been in program since 2010, April, so coming up on a long time. And it means nothing because today is the only day that matters. All I have is today is the point here. So I like to do the what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now, because it helps me to organize my thinking. And please, if there's something I missed, ask in the questions. I am a compulsive overeater from as long back as I can remember. I didn't really know what it was. I didn't realize that it was the thing that I thought was keeping me safe. But as a little girl, I grew up in poverty. I grew up in volatility. My mom, you know, and dad were, you know, self-described gypsies. My dad was an artist. We traveled a lot. Nothing was ever solid or secure. You know, I had very, very fearful. I was a very fearful little girl. My neighborhood had, you know, gangs and, you know, people selling their daughters to people pretending that they were, you know, kidnapped to, you know, murders down the street to summers in Denmark where it was safe as all get up. I was born in Denmark. I had this really weird experience with deep, deep, deep insecurity and like ridiculous bosom of a small town Denmark. And I just didn't know, you know, when the ground was going to drop. You know, my father left us when we were very young. My mom was always of the mind that if nobody was going to give you what you needed, you had to fight for it. I remember as a little girl, I was 12 years old, and I share this because it is one of the early days of me realizing my innocence would get me in trouble, is that a boy showed me his penis. I thought I was pregnant for 2 years. Now, I didn't know how to deal with that. I cried myself to sleep and my mother didn't notice because my mother was caring for two young children all by herself. And, you know, I would be dropped at the bottom of the hill before school at 6:30 in the morning because she had to get to work. I just knew I had to just fake it till I made it. I had to get her done. And I was responsible for that solely by myself the entire time. I flew back to Denmark in standby when I was 8 years old, with my brother, who was 3.5 years older than me, but I was like in charge. I got us best seats. I organized all the things. I was the one who made things okay. And these are all things that made me feel like life was my responsibility and everyone else and no one else was going to take care of me but me. And last I'll say about that, like youth is, from the moment I was a baby, my mother articulated that I was crying hysterically unless I could see what was happening. So she would put me up on a pillow so I could watch all the things that were happening. And really, that was the beginning of me trying to figure out how I can work with what you wanted and become that for you in order to be safe. And, you know, that led me to any number of things. I was, you know, it was very clear to me that I had to be perfect or I was going to die. And perfect is, completely not something that exists. But as a little girl and through my college years, I was told regularly, like, no, you can't be in the AP class, you're not smart enough. No, you took the gifted class, you're not smart enough. You got into Berkeley, you're not smart enough because you need to be going in the subject A English class. Like I was always told, no, and I always said, F you, I'm doing it anyway, suck it. And that is how I always existed and persisted. And similarly, I started realizing that my body was changing. I didn't get my figure until I was almost 16 years old. I also didn't get my menstruation until then. So I always thought that I was going to be this small, petite, like no boobs girl. And suddenly I got these things. What ended up happening when that happened was I was sexually assaulted. I didn't know what to do with that. I thought it was my fault. I didn't tell anyone for decades, and then dated a Mormon for 4 years, and I felt shame about it. All of these things fed me into this idea that I needed to control my food and control my feelings of anxiety and fear. And from there, I was in college, and I recognized one day that I was drinking at a party, and I threw up, and it was my dinner, and then I felt better. And I thought, oh, this is brilliant. This is good business. Like, I can control my feelings by throwing up. And by throwing up, I didn't throw up because I would eat pounds of food. I threw up because I was feeling I couldn't handle one more feeling of fear, anxiety, or other. And so the throwing up became a release valve, not a control valve of my food. It was controlling my fear, my anxiety, my pain, my lack of worthiness, my capability to show up and deliver for you what I thought you needed me to be. And I didn't know who I was. And by the time I was 26 years old, I realized that, I was maneuvering and manipulating people left and right. I was trying to manage men's relationships to me because then they wouldn't hurt me or control me. I was managing my business environment similarly. My friendships, I had 40 versions of like who I was. There's the dance party girl, there's the, I was all these different segmented versions of who I was. And I never wanted to bring those things together. And it took me until I married, met and married and had a child with a sex addict for me to realize, oh shit, oot, this is totally about me. This is not him. I married this man who couldn't control that worked so perfectly well with my disease. And when he started to go to program, I became very resentful to this idea of like, it's not my problem. It's just a disease. I remember going, what the fuck is that? That's some BS. Control it, brother. Right? Like it was the controllable substance and a thing I needed to, like yet again control. And one day I decided, oh, I'm going to go to one of these meetings and see what that's like. And I went to a sex addicts meeting. Then I went to an SLAA meeting. Then I went to an Al-Anon meeting. And then I went to another Al-Anon meeting and I went, ew, it's me? What? I'm like asking for this to come into my life? And I realized, oh, phooey, I have this thing with food. I need to control food. I need to control how I look. I need to obsess about how I show up every day as a way to manage people. And I came into the OA meeting, women's meeting, Sunday mornings, 10:30 a.m. still exists. Granted, it's somewhere else right now, with a bunch of women who were laughing and giggling and like clicky, and I was pissed. Like, what's up with all these clicky ladies who like know each other and they're like, bleh. And I sat there and I yelled at them in the back in my brain. And then I went to Kitchen Sink across the street at the time. It was in the log cabin. And I realized that people looked nothing like me, but they sat in that same story of pain and anxiety, and they were like gorgeous model actor people to all kinds of things in between, to 600 pounds, to all of these things. And I swear to goodness, I hated every one of you until I realized you were loving me till I could love myself. And I hated it for so long, and I just knew I had to keep going. I didn't know why, but I knew I felt safe. And I don't remember any time before program that I ever felt safe. Like, ever. Not with my best friends, not with my husband, not with my mother, not with my dog, not with, not with anything. And the only thing that stopped me from throwing up was that I got pregnant with my daughter. But it was still maniacal in here. And going, coming into program, what I did, and I was lucky enough with now I know, the help of a power greater than myself, that I stopped throwing up. And I did it initially because my daughter, right? Like, my daughter, that was my higher power at first. Then it became the rooms. Then it became individual people who saw me, who I let see me, let's be honest. Because I never let anybody see me, because then if you saw me, you were going to not like me. That's how that worked. If you saw who I really was, if you saw the things I was, if you heard the things I was really thinking, if you heard the fact that I, woke up and I ate an entire gallon of ice cream and then threw it up, you would go, "Oh, that's sick. You are sick." And I was sick, and I am sick, and I think I'll be sick till the day I die. But I have these moments every day throughout these years of reprieve, like, "Oh my God, that happened. What, I wasn't thinking about it today. Whoa," right? In the middle of all this in program, the one thing I heard many, many times is, you can go through all these life experiences and still do that and not throw up. And I thought, that's just crazy, right? Like, had a kid, didn't throw up. I dealt with my husband's addiction, didn't throw up. Started going to Al-Anon because he was just stopped doing program, and I was deeper into program. And so I thought to do a geographical. I thought, ooh, I got a job working for, get this, the Hershey Company in Pennsylvania. Chocolate on every surface in bowls like this big. I moved to Pennsylvania, Hershey, where they have kisses as their lampposts. And I didn't mow go to Motown. My husband was deep in his disease, doing all this other stuff, but because of Al-Anon and my ability to use the 12 steps in all of my affairs, I was not attaching myself to my value relative to him. It still was a process for me. But going to Pennsylvania, I was able to recognize that program goes with you wherever you go. And I walked into the room. The meetings were like two, and there were like 40 minutes this way and 50 minutes that way, and go under a rock on a Tuesday and, like, hope that you can. And there were like three people in the meeting, and the recovery was like, right? And what I recognized was that it wasn't about that. It was about showing up and hearing the same consistent stories, the same literature, the same words repeatedly. We're safe. I went instantly into these rooms and felt safe. That was just like beyond my comprehension. What do you mean they love me? What do you mean I loved them? Who are these weird people? I mean, let's be honest. Pennsylvania, we call Hershey Pennsyltucky. So I came from the bubble of California to Pennsyltucky with a lot of other things happening. And this was during this 2016 election. And I will say, I even loved some of those people that had nothing connected to my personal beliefs in the world. And I was realizing that we're all just in pain. Like, pain is not relative. Pain is just pain. I don't know how deep everybody's version of pain is. The things that we've done, taking food from the trash can, having to like smush it, squash it, piss on it, if you will, so that I won't eat it. Like, what the hell is that about? And I haven't done that in so long, but it's a process. Like, it still comes up. There are days that I will wake up and I'll be like, yeah, that's my best idea right there. I'm gonna eat an entire gallon of ice cream. I eat like a function of it and I'm like, bleh, and not throwing up. Because if I ate it, I keep it. Right? Like, that is my number one most bottom thing. But what I will tell you about program is, for me, is imagine like a roller coaster, how there's like ticks, 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 right? Like, there's a process. There's no such thing as slips for me. Slips are a function of many, many guardrails before I get to the deep slip. And I still have guardrails that are like knocked down, I'm like, oh, damn it, there it is again. So what that meant for me was like, I can't stop doing this work. The only thing I did relative, I mean, as perfect as you're gonna get is coming back, going to meetings everywhere and anywhere, right? Reading this literature I love for today. In fact, today was about perfectionism and like,
Excuse
duh.
me, 5 minutes left.
Thank you. And what I know for sure today is that reading for today every day, meditating every day, having a sponsor, it took me a long time. I tried to self-sponsor for a really long time. I had to go through a bunch of people because I had this idea of perfect, right? Like, oh, it's got to be the perfect person and she's got to like me and I got to like her. And like, it's got to, like, I created all these boundaries and barriers. And what I know is, you get who you're supposed to get when you get them. So to that end, I grew up where religion was for stupid people, and people who believed in God were equally stupid. Like, what the hell? Like, there's no evidence. Like, what? And what I have come to believe is that it's just not me, right? You can call it what you will. You can do what you need to do to find that faith, that belief in, that inner voice. But for me, it has amalgamated, right? It was my daughter, then it was the rooms, then it was a sponsor, then it was fellows, small group fellows. And today it's inside of me. It's connected to me. I've come to know that through meditation. And that is, if I'm listening, the whispers are for me. I was able to get laid off, well, quit because I got laid off because I told them I wouldn't do the integrity things that they were choosing to go around. I told my husband, no more, you do your program or I'm out. Or now I'm divorcing. I 2 weeks ago, a week and a half ago, I was in Egypt all by myself. I just traveled by myself and did, these things. My daughter is in college. She's exceptionally like happy. And all of that is because I let the higher power make some of these decisions. Even before talking today, I had to realize this is never about me. This is about what's coming up for me today. And hopefully somebody hears something that makes, that connects for them or reminds them of something that they already knew. But vulnerability is something I have to work on every day. My life was always about racing at 1,000 miles an hour, because if you caught up to me, you'd realize, right? I wasn't worthy. I wasn't sufficient. I was half the woman you thought I was, if that, right? Half the woman I thought I was, half the woman I thought I had to be. And, I am terminally flawed. I have to watch every day for the most minuscule of lies. Because any mini, mini lie, white lie, is like a is one of those tick boxes, you know, before I do the thing. Even lying about like, oh, traffic, it was so bad. No, I just started late. Like, no, like it's gotta be simpler than that. And those are the things that make me want to have that extra little thing. And that extra, you know, thing. And calling in fat. Oh my God. When I came back from Pennsylvania, I'll leave it at this until questions, but when I came back from Pennsylvania, you know, we bought a house. I exponentially grew my career. I did all these things. And in the last 3.5 years, my universe is telling me, no, you're working in contract work and you're gonna teach and you're gonna do these things and you're gonna like it. No, I'm not gonna like it, but I'm gonna do it anyway. Because that's the next right action. And there's nowhere to go but up every day because I wake up with KFuck radio every single day. And I have to tell the radio, turn it down and recognize that I can let it go. And I couldn't have done any of this without these rooms, these people that show up in all these different rooms, but more importantly, like that I'm willing to be flawed in front of people and be scared and tell you I'm, you know, I saw a boy's penis and I thought I was pregnant for 2 years. Like that's embarrassing. But I'm still naive and I'm scared and anxious. And program helps me to get past that. So thanks for letting me share. This is the time for questions only. There's no sharing at this meeting. If you need to share, please do so with any of us after the meeting. Also, please remember that the opinions of the leader are my own and not those of Overeaters Anonymous as a whole. When asking questions, you need not identify yourself. If you asked a question last week, please wait until the first three questions have been asked before raising your hand. If you have a question, please click the raise your hand icon. Please stop at 9:50. Blah, blah. Okay. Stephanie, unmute.
Thank you. Sorry about that. Thank you so much. Always love to hear you talk. You mentioned, sort of having like 40 different personalities depending on the friend group and behaving different way. How do you integrate that more wholly, kind of on a daily basis? Or like, how did you come to even recognize that? I don't know. Can you just talk a little bit more about that?
Sure,
Thanks.
sure. The way that I came to understand that was through doing the 12 steps, working through each of the steps, I was able to recognize that there were pieces and parts that suddenly fit together. But I will say in my 20s, my late 20s, before program, I realized I just couldn't. I was exhausted. I couldn't be for everyone anymore. And so what I did was I just started limiting who I would hang out with. I didn't know why I started to do that then, but many years later, probably about 8 years later, when I went into program and started to do the work, I came to understand that these parts were part of the lies that I would tell, that I would realize that like this group didn't know this part of me. So I would start to fold it in. Like I would start to fold it in. And so I started to bring these groups together in an effort to see which ones felt more real and authentic for me. And a lot of them dropped away. And that is what I realized now in program is that there are people that I for decades would keep in my life that I felt almost afraid of letting go. Like they were some sort of a safety net for when I became that broken up person of myself. And each time I do program and go to meetings, it's like a little grain keeps coming back, you know, and the entirety of who I am today, I think, is who is able to say, hey, no, I'm not going to do this at the job. Hey, no, I'm not going to stay in this marriage if you're not going to do your part. Again, you know, he's got his own work, right? But I had to realize that each of these Boundaries. I drew boundaries with my mother. Like, I started to find ways to realize that me being me and taking care of me didn't mean I was a bad person. And that is what I thought. So it's work every day. And it's something I ask myself on a regular basis if somebody and some groups are for me. And I get to say, like, I don't like that feeling. And I'm going to turn that off. Recently, I was, you know, dating and I was like, that's just not enough for me. Okay. He's great. We had a chat. It was all good. And I just was like, yeah, no. And I would have never done that before because I would have felt like I need to keep it because just in case, you know. So thank you for asking that question. Oh, Kat.
Hi, Rika. Thank you for your lead. It's so good hearing you. Can you talk a little bit about what your spiritual routine is in a day and if it changes when you have big life changes like moving or leaving your marriage?
Great question, Kat. We don't repeat questions because it's recorded. Okay. So that was just me having a moment. My spiritual program has changed a lot since I started. And the real differential for me was when I started meditating. I started meditating in small chunks, like 1 minute. Let me do 2 minutes. I always thought I had to do like a perfect amount or I should never do it. Don't do it. Like, don't try if you can't do like an hour, like, you know, or some number that I thought was the right number. And what I came to understand is that if I gave myself increments of success that were small enough that they were like really doable, I could, you know, grow from there. And through doing that, I was able to listen versus, you know, they say prayer is asking and meditation is listening. And for me, meditation was the only way I was able to slow down and listen. And what I came to find through meditation and listening is that it didn't have to be those formal moments of meditation. It was things like, whew, I don't know what to do here. Pause. I don't have to do anything right now. Pause. I get to feel scared and write about it. I get to, you know, I've done the moments where I've written something and then I ask my higher power to write me back. And my higher power almost invariably says things like, Rika, it's going to be okay. You're going to be fine. Yes, it's scary. Yes, it's uncomfortable, but you're going to be okay. Why do I know that today? It's because I lived through what I lived through in my life, that I've been able to stand on my own 2 feet and be a powerful, capable woman. And, you know, I'm not for everybody. And that's okay. And when it comes to making big decisions like divorce and jobs and moving and going to Egypt, I trust. I don't wait for it to be safe anymore. I take the next right action. And somebody told me decades ago in program, if your limiting belief is not true, what is the next thing you would do? So like, I'm afraid. I don't want to do that. I'm not fat. I'm too fat. The story. Well, if that's not true, what's the next thing you do? It's as simple as that. And my higher power always answers that for me. And it doesn't mean it's not scary. And it doesn't mean that I don't ask for help. And that's the other thing. I've had to ask for help. You know, from sponsors, from fellows, reaching out when I don't want to reach out. Like, those are things that I never would have done before because I have to look like my shit's together. And today my shit's not together. I'm super flawed. You know, the universe is giving me shit I don't want. And I have to just like say, well, maybe what if that's not true? Maybe I do want it. Maybe I don't know. You know, you never know. So, you know, it's an evolving thing, but, you got this. I know I got this because we got a higher power. Thank you. Hey, Bob.
Thank you, Rika. Incredible share. How important is service to you with this program?
Honestly, it is like the most important thing for me. If I can, I will. Somebody asks me to speak, somebody needs me to move stuff. The reason it's so important for me is because it's not about whether I want to or not. It is like not about wanting to, because I don't want to go to meetings. I don't want to do all these things every day. I don't want to have to, I don't want to, like, the list is long of what I don't want. And what I know is like the people that were there when I came into those rooms probably have I don't wanna going on, right? Like every one of us with anything and all things. And now what I know is like if like my ex-husband asks me if I can help him with something, I'll help him with something. If someone else asks me, I'll help them with something. Doesn't matter if I like them, doesn't matter if whatever. If I can, I will. And when it comes to service, it lets me get out of my own BS of like all things Rika, what Rika wants, what Rika doesn't want, what Rika should, what, you know, like it doesn't matter. And you know, doing service, I've led meetings, I, you know, brought meetings that were Zoom to in person. I've chosen to do things that I don't want to do, like the recording. It's a pain in the butt. You got to listen. You got people's like I remember it was like, oh, it was a story. And I was like, what if that's not true? Guess what? I'm just gonna record it anyway, right? Like, what if I don't want it? Doesn't matter. I'm gonna do it anyway. And I think that's what also to Kat's question is like what enables me to do the hard things is that, you know, it doesn't matter. Like you lose your job, you have to do something next. Like it's not a debate, society, right? Reality is reality. And service really supports the idea that it's not about me, it's about us, and what's best for us. Thank you, Bob. Anyone else? Oh, okay.
I'll go.
Go. Who was that? Oh, Lisa.
Lisa,
Hi,
thank
Lisa.
you.
And then Cheryl and then Anna. Go.
Thank you for an incredible lead and share. Amazing. How do you handle, I think you've been covering this, but I want to know, how do you handle sadness, like loss, like your daughter going to school, all the things that come up in life that are sad. And you feel like nothing can fix that. How do you handle those moments?
A great question, Lisa. One at a time. You know, there's mourning that comes with separation. There's mourning with leaving jobs and trying to find a new identity for myself. There's sadness and sabotage and negative self-talk around things, you know, and but what
Excuse me,
I'm
5 minutes left for Q&A.
Thank you. And so, you know, when it comes to my daughter, I kind of think about it as like, wow, I'm so sad, but I'm so proud of her. Like, I'm so proud of her being just in on her own journey. And also they can coexist. I can be sad about it too. You know, I cry, I talk to friends. Fellows, I go to more meetings. You know, I meditate. I read literature. Like I literally these freaking, you know, tools are phenomenal because you can pick up any one of them at different times for whatever your willingness is. And it's also okay to be sad. That's the other thing too, like I'm sad that like things aren't the way that I want them to be, but what I know for sure is my journey is not mine to, you know, I get whispered all kinds of things in my day, and I just have to keep going. because reality is reality and feelings are feelings and I get to feel them and I don't throw up about them anymore. But sadness is part, you know, like that movie back in the day, like, you know, all the feelings are necessary, all of them, you know, they come for different reasons. And I think that accepting those is really important. Cheryl.
You know what, Rekha? I'm going to defer to Anna Sophia and Megan because I can ask this another time, but thank you for your amazing share. Thank you so much.
Okay, Anna? Oh, you're not muted. I mean, you are muted.
Okay. Hi, I'm Anna Sophia. I'm a compulsive overeater, bulimic, orthorexic. I'm super grateful to be here. I'm a newcomer to this meeting. Rekha, thank you so much for your share. You know, it was incredible. I guess I want to just ask you more about how you define your abstinence. Because for me, at least, like even within the bounds of what my nutritionist says is abstinent, I still play around and I still, you know, do little things. And it's like, it calls into question, like, what is abstinence and how can I also keep emotional abstinence?
Great question, Anna. And I will say when it comes to abstinence, the number one thing for me is that I don't throw up no matter what. If I eat it, I keep it. That said, there are evolving layers of ways that I like to self-abuse, right? And what has helped me with that is when I'm not rigorously honest, I know there's something off. Right. When I'm saying, oh, I ate oatmeal, instead of saying I have the oatmeal with the, you know, sugar and the doodly-doo and like all this other stuff. And I know it, that will continue to talk in my brain. And then the next thing, right. It's all those clicks on the roller coaster for me. But I will say like that honesty has been a function of my willingness to trust others with telling people and still feeling like, wow, it's hard for me to tell people. You know, it's really hard for me to say like, I'm not perfect when I know I'm not perfect and everybody else knows I'm not perfect, but it doesn't change the fact that I like, even just saying it sometimes is like the scariest thing. Like I'm gonna die. And the best thing I can say is that when I didn't tell you this morning for breakfast, I'm going to try again at lunch. I'm going to try again at dinner. I'm going to try again the next day. I'm going to, you know, and I just have to keep coming back with the stories that get me closer to I'm going to throw up, right? Because I am flawed. And so this is going to play out in all these places. And I just have to be willing to know that I keep coming back and keep trying to find new ways to be willing and accepting of my flaws. And like, I'm not going to be perfect and that's okay. And I'm still enough and I'm still loved. It doesn't matter. It matters only that we keep coming back for me.
Thank you.
Thank you everyone for letting me share.